Nolo, your legal companion.
Hello. In this episode, we're discussing legal issues that affect people with diabetes. We're speaking with attorney Chris Halpern, an expert on diabetes and the law, and the creator of the website diabetesattorney.net, where you can find a great deal of information about the legal issues that we'll be discussing. Chris, before we discuss the legal issues, perhaps you can start out by providing a little background about the disease.
Sure. Well, I personally have type 1 diabetes. There are two kinds, type 1 and type 2. Historically, a lot of people referred to type 1 as juvenile diabetes and type 2 as adult onset diabetes. What's happened, though, is that we've come to realize that a lot of people are first diagnosed with their type 1 diabetes later in life, and so it's not just children who have it, obviously, or who are first diagnosed with it. And similarly, for type 2 diabetes, that used to be typically diagnosed later in life, and now, in fact, we have an epidemic of children in this country who have type 2 diabetes. Medically, maybe the difference is that people with type 1 diabetes, their pancreas has essentially completely stopped producing insulin, and people with type 2 diabetes are usually producing some amount of insulin and maybe even the same amount as normal, but are not utilizing it properly or fully.
Chris, can you give us an idea what it's like for a person to have diabetes on a day-to-day basis?
Well, in my case, and this is true for anybody who has type 1, you need to watch carefully what you're eating and how that absorbs into your bloodstream. So because my pancreas doesn't produce any insulin at all, I have to take injections of insulin to get any energy utilized out of the food I eat. What you do on a day-to-day basis is test your blood sugars and then know what you're eating so that you can figure out how much insulin you take. And you have to adjust your insulin or your food depending on how much exercise you're going to get and other things that happen throughout the course of the day. So you just generally have to know what you're doing to follow a regimen safely so that you can just live your life as anybody else does.
Was there any particular incident that motivated you to become an advocate for persons with diabetes?
I was fortunate when I was first diagnosed. I was in college and I took part in an experiment into how to handle diabetes. Mm-hmm. And the study was called the Diabetes Control and Complications Trial. It was known as the DCCT. When the experiment ended, it was tough to get HMOs and insurance plans to pay for the kind of care that I'd been getting during the course of that experiment. So I had to, for myself, start fighting with my own HMO to try to get that care. And once I learned how to do it for myself, it was not difficult for me to know how to do it for other people. And so I started getting calls and kind of making speeches around the country about how to do that. And then over time, I realized there were a lot of other legal issues related to diabetes that people would start calling me about. And when that happened, it was fairly routine for me to figure out an answer.
Chris, let's talk about some employment issues. What are some of the most common issues that arise in the workplace for people who have diabetes?
I'd say the most common things that people have trouble with are just being allowed to treat their diabetes routinely. Among other things, you need to test your blood sugar. So I've come across situations where people with diabetes are trying to test their blood sugars in the workplace, and somebody tells them they can't do that, that it's unsafe and dangerous. And so I try to work with the employer in those situations to let them know that, you know, they have to reasonably accommodate the person and make it possible for them to manage their blood sugars safely, and that it frankly isn't all that big a deal to stick a little bit drop of blood into a meter and learn your blood sugar. The other issue that does sometimes come up is being allowed to take a break, not only to test your blood sugar, but also to eat. People who are on insulin need to be able to eat so that their blood sugars don't go too low. So they have to be given some kind of accommodation to be able to handle that safely. The other issues that come up fairly often have to do with things like driving. You have to work with an employer to let them know that it may be both legal and safe for a person on insulin to drive a commercial vehicle. That's the kind of stuff that comes up frequently.
Chris, I assume that the Americans with Disabilities Act covers all issues regarding people with diabetes in the workplace. Is that correct?
There is some debate about whether or not the Americans with Disabilities Act applies to people with diabetes in all cases. I think it does, but it's an arguable point. There was a U.S. Supreme Court case called Sutton versus United Airlines, which didn't directly involve diabetes. It involved a couple of women who were trying to get jobs as pilots with United Airlines, and they had relatively minor vision issues and just needed eyeglasses to be able to see so that they could fly planes. And United Airlines had a policy that if somebody needed eyeglasses, they couldn't be pilots. The Supreme Court held that if your disability can be handled in a way that's relatively straightforward, and just you simply need some kind of adjustment like a medication or putting eyeglasses on, then you're not truly disabled. And as a result, in the debate among the Supreme Court at that time, one of the dissenters argued that that would mean that people with diabetes aren't really disabled because all they do is take a shot of insulin and that works on their diabetes. So the dissent in that case who made that point was actually arguing that by saying that people with diabetes are clearly considered disabled, so why are we considering that somebody who can just put eyeglasses on wouldn't also be disabled? As a result, though, it actually boomeranged and went the other way. Some people started then saying, gee, that must mean that people who are on insulin are not really disabled because you can take insulin and the insulin handles your disease so that you're no different than anybody else. So why would you be considered disabled? To me, that just has always shown, frankly, a limitation on the understanding of diabetes and insulin. The problems that a lot of us with diabetes have are actually related to the insulin. The insulin can actually, the thing that you're taking to help with your illness can itself cause a problem. Because when you have too much insulin in your system, that can lead to dangerous problems. So it's not as simple as just putting eyeglasses and eliminating the issue.
Chris, does an employer have the freedom to decide which jobs are suitable for a person with diabetes?
It's legally wrong to simply say, because you have diabetes, you therefore can't do this. What they do have to do is look at the individual and see how their specific case of diabetes does or doesn't impact their ability to do the work. There are many jobs where it can be an issue, and it would be reasonable to exclude a person. For example, I've come across cases of fire departments or police departments not wanting to hire people with diabetes, in particular if the person is on insulin. The problem for people in jobs like that is that they may get fired or told that they can't continue their job if they go on insulin. So it's a serious problem because there's a lot of things you can do to make it easy to drive safely, to be a police officer safely, to be a fire officer safely if you're on insulin.
During a job interview, can an employer ask a applicant whether they have diabetes?
No. Okay. No, you can never just ask it like that. What oftentimes happens is that, for example, in the case of a police department, they'll send somebody through the job application process, not ask about their medical history, but then once they make the job offer, they'll say something like, here, we want you to accept this job pending medical history evaluation to make sure you can handle the job. That's typically how it can work legally.
What actions should a person with diabetes take if they feel that they are being discriminated against in the workplace?
Well, there depends on the state, but federally, you can always contact the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission if you feel you've been discriminated against, and different states often have similar agencies in California where I practice. We've got the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, which looks at workplace discrimination issues. Before you contact either of those agencies, though, the agencies will always ask that you've made an effort to try to work with your employer and explain your circumstances, explain what reasonable accommodations you may need, and try to make sure you can avoid even having to contact them. And, you know, my experience, at least in the case of diabetes, is that more often than not, the thing can get resolved at that time. You just explain to your employer that you've got a need to test your blood sugar and you've got a need to eat at certain times when your blood sugars are at certain levels. And most employers understand that without too much difficulty.
Chris, I know that you represent many people with diabetes who have had issues with the Department of Motor Vehicles. Can you explain why these issues arise?
Well, the reason why there is an issue is because of when your blood sugar goes too low, that's called hypoglycemia. So when you experience hypoglycemia and your blood sugar goes too low, there's a lot of different things that can happen. Among other things, it slows down your thought process. It slows down your reflexes. So if you continue to drive while your blood sugar is low and you're suffering hypoglycemia, that can be very unsafe. If you're on insulin, it is more than possible. It's likely that at some point you will suffer hypoglycemia. So you need to be trained in how to avoid it, what to do when it happens, and to make sure that you can drive safely. So sometimes people get reported to the DMV either because they've gone too low, perhaps behind the wheel and gotten into an accident, or just pulled over and didn't know what they were doing and a police officer came by, or somebody was called to the scene, and that ends up getting reported to the DMV, and that can lead to a suspension. And a lot of times that's when I get contacted, is in those circumstances when somebody's license has been suspended, and then we need to show that in fact the person can drive safely.
Chris, have you had any experience representing people who were stopped by the police? The driver was suffering from hypoglycemia, but the police officer thought it was a DUI.
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, that's happened. I think, frankly, more often than it should happen, because I don't happen to agree that the symptoms are so incredibly similar that somebody trained can't and shouldn't be able to tell the difference. And I've also represented people who have been arrested for DUI when in fact they just had low blood sugars, and there have been examples of people getting arrested and taken to jail and locked up, and nobody helped them to get their blood sugar back to normal, and inevitably you fall into a coma and would eventually die if nobody helped you to raise your blood sugars. So it can be a pretty serious thing if an arresting officer doesn't fairly quickly see the difference between somebody who's drunk and somebody who has a low blood sugar.
What's it like for a person with diabetes who has to take on an HMO because they've been denied coverage?
It's definitely difficult and frustrating. Things have improved since the time that experiment that I was in ended and had to deal with my own HMO. And in fact, I helped to get a law passed. And a similar law has been passed in, I believe, 46 of the states now that requires HMOs and insurance carriers to treat paying for diabetes supplies and education needs the same as they would anything else. So they can't just refuse to pay for something because it's related to diabetes and they don't want to incur those expenses. So to that extent, it's improved. That said, there are still problems that come up, and so oftentimes you have to go through the battle of fighting with the plan and appealing a refusal to pay for something. And those fights take a lot of time and energy and emotion, and they're a pain in the rear. A lot of people who take insulin are now on insulin pumps. When insulin pumps first came out, that was a huge fight to get an insurance company to pay for them. Now that's fairly standard. There is a newer tool to use called a continuous glucose meter. And these things actually work in some way similar to a pump. They don't supply insulin, but they are constantly reading your blood sugar level and then warning you if you either go too high or too low. So somebody who's got a job like a commercial driver and wants to make sure that they never go too low and never suffer from hypoglycemia can get one of these things. For short, I'll call them a CGM. So CGMs can be really a lifesaver, but because they're new and they're, as a result, expensive still, health insurance companies don't want to pay for them. So you got to fight for them. And that starts by appealing it internally within the plan. If they still refuse, then there is almost always a state insurance agency of some kind that you can file an appeal with and get them to look at independently. And hopefully, if you've done your homework and gotten the evidence showing why this tool or medication would be helpful to you, you can ultimately get the insurance company to pay for it.
Chris, thank you so much for all this great information.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Again, if you're interested in more information from Chris Halpern about diabetes and the law, check out his website at diabetesattorney.net. And don't forget to check out our new audiobook, Nolo's Crash Course in Small Business Basics. And it includes a lot of helpful information about small business finances, collections, credit, personal liability, insurance, how to form a business entity, marketing and advertising tips, taking your business online, how to hire employees or contractors, information about obtaining permits and entering into contracts, and a whole disc dealing with paying your taxes and saving money with tax deductions. You can get a copy of this 5-disc audiobook at Amazon or at Nolo's website.
Copyright by Nolo.
For over 35 years, Nolo has produced reliable, self-help legal and business books, software, and forms. Check us out on the web at www.nolo.com. This audio program provides legal information. Consult a lawyer if you want professional assurance that the information is appropriate to your particular situation.